Hello and welcome back to Millennial 2020. This is the final stream of the, I think, 12th night, and it is one of the hotly anticipated streams. It is with Mike Enoch. I think Mike doesn't need any introduction, but well, why don't you introduce yourself just for the sake of it, Mike?
How's it going? Thanks for having me on. Mike Enoch, also Mike Painovich is what I'm going by now, as the chairman of the National Justice Party. Also, I've been doing TRS, the right stuff. .biz, as people know, I've been doing that for years, still doing it. TDS, Strike and Mike, and also check out, you know, nationaljusticeparty.com. The National Justice Party being a recent effort at the organization of a pro-white political party in America, which is going well so far. It's going to be a very long and hard struggle, but we're putting our noses to the grindstone, so to speak, and we're willing to be in it for the long haul, and it's probably going to be a long haul.
So, do you want to describe the National Justice Party to people, just so that they know, an introduction? I mean, there are people, believe me, loads of my fans are in the live chat going, NJP, NJP, NJP. So a lot of them already know, but go for it anyway.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that support. And we've actually gotten a lot of support online. And of course, we welcome support from across the pond as well, and in Europe, and all our white brothers across the world. But basically, we are fed up with trying to use the Republican Party as some kind of proxy, get something transactional out of the Republican Party. We all felt really burned by Trump, having been a big supporters of his in 2016. We felt that even if some of the people that were backing Trump got quite a lot of what they wanted, particularly in the realm of foreign policy and Middle East policy, that perhaps we would get something that we wanted for whites in America, some rolling back of the extreme demographic changes that have been imposed by the left, shall we say, the left. And maybe we get a border wall. Maybe we get some deportation of illegal immigrants. Maybe we get some manufacturing and other jobs going back to the Midwest and the center part of the country, a revival of some of the white populations there. And maybe a scaling back of the opiate epidemic, which is killing our people. But we got none of that. We got words, we got tweets, we got owning of libtards and media figures that everyone doesn't like, but we didn't really get anything, even transactionally, out of Trump. And it seemed that there was almost a perverse delight in not giving it to us. And Trump almost seemed to fight for things, and everything he fought for was in the exact wrong way. It was almost set up. It was like he was setting up bowling pins for liberals, so-called liberals, to come and knock down. And we just got fed up with that. And we realized that, look, there's no hiding behind anything. We can't trick anybody. We can't deny who we are. We can't sneak up on anybody. We can't pretend to be something else. We're just going to be who we are. We are pro-white Americans. And of course, we're pro-white across the world as well. But, you know, we're in America, so that's where we focus. And we're just not going to hide it. And we need to organize politically and advocate politically and put a little bit more organization behind our efforts and like actual something like a flag to sort of plant in the ground and rally around on that cause. So,
well, after all, everyone else does this. Right. Every other group advocates on their own behalf, right, and for their own interests. So it's about time, really, that whites did it in America.
Yeah, and everyone thinks that, you know, I'm just so tired of playing political genius, playing 4D or 5D or whatever D chess master or hungry, hungry hippo master or whatever game it might be. In fact, the only game really that we were the master of, the only board game you could say we were the master of over the last 4 years was Sorry. You ever play that game? Sorry. That's that's the true game that anybody purporting to be a board game master over the last several years was the master of, myself included. I'm not excluding myself from this criticism. I fell for Trump hard, and I'm not denying it. But we have to learn, move on, admit it, take the lumps, and this is what we're doing. So we just have to do it ourselves. Like, there's no other way around it. And that's what we decided.
Before we get into that, I think it would be interesting to ask, at what point in Trump's presidency did you make this decision? Did you realize, okay, this is not going to work out?
Oh, man, it's a long story. My first real break with Trump, and this is publicly, actually very early, when he first bombed Syria in April of 2017, I went out with Richard Spencer and some other people, and we did a very public anti-Trump, anti-war, anti-Syria bombing and very focused on Trump himself. We also did another protest later on in the year where we actually threw our MAGA hats over the at the fence there in front of the White House, which that was the less publicized one because nothing really happened and didn't get any press, frankly. So very few people actually even know or remember that one. It was, but nothing happened, right? There's no crazy violence, no death, no insane anarchists attacking us. So it just went off, and that was that. But so I was always, you know, the criticism, I was always willing to criticize Trump. I was never Trump is all seeing, all knowing.
I remember at the start there was a certain dilemma in the movement about whether to criticize him or not. Should we keep giving him the benefit of the doubt, or should we start being, you know, treating him like any other politician? At first, people weren't sure how to approach it.
Weirdly. I think before he won the election, there was more pressure. Once he won, it's like, okay, now, like, he's president. He's going to be president for 4 years. Like, we have to be able to say things now. Like, before, and I remember even in TRS, we went back and forth on this. And at the very beginning, we're actually very hesitant. If you go way, way back to, like, early 2016, you'll see us being like, But then we got really hardcore on board with them. And, you know, that 2017 thing, I was convinced, okay, maybe that's a one-time thing. Then he does it again in April of 2018. He literally, 1 year later, he bombed Syria again. I once again attacked him. The final split, at which point I would no longer support him, came after he did a government shutdown in order to get wall funding right around the time of the midterm elections at the end of 2018. And then he ended it. He was going for a couple of weeks, and he ended it without getting any concessions. And the whole thing was fake. And right around the same time, the Mueller probe ended. And at that point, I was very much off the Trump train. So I'd say really, if you want to say permanently, it would have been 2019 on, with, you know, spats of like equivocal support and also very vocal support up until that point. So, yeah,
it's funny how much happens and how much you forget. I'd completely forgotten about that thing where the at the end of 2018, when the Congress was sort of in stasis, it was in flux because he was holding out for something. I'd completely forgotten about all of that because at the time it was a big drama, wasn't it? Big news.
Yeah, story. The theory was, as the story goes, he was holding out for $5 billion to fund his wall, which was a walk back from the $25 billion he had initially wanted, that he said he wanted, and in the 2018 spending bill he didn't get, and he signed it anyway. And then he said, like, this is the last time I'll sign a bill like this. And then, of course, after that, he just stopped talking about it. The last 2 years of Trump, the wall and immigration weren't even on the table. I mean, he barely brought immigration stuff back in for his reelection campaign. And I think if he had done that more, and people want to talk about the election and was it stolen, was it not? I don't actually think it was. I think there certainly was election fraud, but I think Biden probably won. I mean, of course, certain states, maybe you'll never know, but Trump could have won. He could have won. And just for an example, and I've talked about this many times, state of Wisconsin, there are 900,000 voting age white people who are not registered to vote with no college degree. 900,000 whites without a college degree, voting age, unregistered. Why didn't Trump try to get those people registered? In the state of Pennsylvania, there are 2.1 million white people that fit the same description. These are two states he won 2016, lost in 2020, and had he motivated a tenth of those people to vote for him, he would have won both of those states. And he didn't even try. So why did he abandon the white working class? Why did he abandon the heart and soul of this country? Why did he abandon Midwestern whites? Why did he abandon us? Why did he abandon middle and white working class white people, period? Why did he abandon us? He just didn't care. And all of his interest went to another country, a different country. I don't know if maybe I should mention it. It doesn't really matter. It's somewhere on the map there. You can find it. It's very close to, it's right there on the in the Middle East. And he had a lot of friends who are dedicated to that, many people. In fact, not only that, he's also, if you look at the pardons that he's now engaging in, look at the backgrounds of a lot of the people he's pardoning. You'll find that many of them belong to a group that would be loyal to this particular country. So, in fact, there's evidence that his son-in-law is the one controlling this process and probably has controlled him the whole time and is recommending these literally people that are associates of his particular, not just the whole religious group, but his particular sect of that religious group are just guys. This one guy ripped off Medicare, which is a social, medical. I know we don't have socialized medical system in the U.S., but we have something for poor people called there's Medicaid for the poor and Medicare for old people. And I think he ripped off Medicare for like $1.4 billion. This guy, and he just got pardoned. He got pardoned. $1.4 billion in Medicare fraud. Pardoned. Why? Because of he belongs to a privileged group.
Right, yeah.
And that's who Trump cares about.
It definitely seems like that group has cajoled him and pushed him in certain directions throughout the course of it. I mean, and from very early on. What do you think of the theory that he's done all this to please his daughter, and that she's under the?
I've heard these theories psychoanalyzing him and his motives for years, and they've always rung a little bit false to me. And I don't really think that anyone's gotten to the heart of it. I think maybe some has something to do with it. His son-in-law certainly seems to have quite a grip on policy. I think he just believes the same things, though. I think that's the most likely explanation. Also, the fact that his behavior is totally predictable. If the interests of this particular group, and not only that, but this particular sect within that particular group, is in play, you know what he's going to do. And he rarely does anything unless that group is in play. Otherwise, it's a complete stagnation or just tweeting. Just tweeting, this guy's an idiot, that guy's a moron. I mean, amazing how little white Americans get that people were so thrilled just to see a guy saying that certain media figures that are known for being really anti-white and extremely left-wing are just called a moron. Just this guy goes and calls them idiots and morons, and that's enough to generate this fierce loyalty amongst a small and growing smaller group. But it's quite remarkable. It shows what could a real leader engender amongst whites in this country.
Well, yeah, and of course that other group did get paranoid just with the tiny amount of reaching out to whites that Trump did do. Even the sort of dog whistles, the subtle things, that was enough to just send them electric. So, I mean, I get what you're saying, that it at this point it doesn't really matter why he behaved this way. But, it does in the sense that what would a future president,
right?
Would he be up against the same pressures? But I guess that doesn't really matter because the next president, I'm getting in your mind, is Biden, and he would never defy this stuff anyway. Because
if having your children married to members of this group is a metric that we're going to use, Biden is even more compromised. Like all of his children, because he has actually all of his living children. He's had two children that have died, but I believe his three surviving children are all married to members of this same group. And not only that, something like 75% of the people he has thus far picked to be in his cabinet are members of this same group. And there's an article actually on nationaljusticeparty.com by myself and Warren Balog, a fellow party member, who we wrote a detailed article about these picks, these members of his cabinet, that you can go check out. And So look, anybody thinking that there's any like, oh, he's the good guys, the competent people are back in charge, or finally there'll be stability. No, it's going to be it's from our perspective, it is not going to be actually much of a change, really.
Yeah. So when you and I spoke a few weeks ago, you were saying that actually this is a good outcome because it clarifies the situation.
I believe that the situation, look, again, if the issue is, the issue we have right now is that things aren't clear. Many Americans do not understand how their country is run and who is running it. And the basic issues of that are totally mystified by the news media and by the news media that takes different sides, like CNN or Fox. Like, if you get involved in that level of that's moronic level discourse, let's be honest. Like, it's stupid, right? Like, it's really dumb. And people really, let's be honest, like, no one should be that stupid to fall into that, in our movement at least. I know there are people probably in your family or that you know or you work with that are, but you just got to talk to those kind of people and try and speak some sense to them and break them out of it a little bit. Some can be a lot of more than you would think can be talked to, but they just haven't been presented with anything really smart before. So that's all made up. But yeah, so what was the question again? I'm sorry.
You said that it clarifies the situation.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
To have someone like Biden in who's openly celebrating whites being dispossessed in America.
Yes, going to clarify. He has said things openly celebrating that. So I think that the two things that need to be clarified for whites is, one, we are being racially attacked. Okay. And the entire system is doing it. I think that's actually somewhat of an easier case to make than the issue of who is doing it and why, which gets a little bit more complicated and a little more murky. But I would say the issue that whites are racially under attack, certainly there's peripheral other things that feel like they're being under attack, whether you can call it conservative values. I wouldn't even call them conservative. It's more just like normal, decent white people's values. Christianity suffers somewhat from this, but I would say Christianity is only attacked when it's white people doing it. Black Christianity does not come under attack. And nor does liberal Christianity, which is a big force in America, actually. There's quite a lot of liberal Christianity, which is very pro-gay and pro-homosexual, pro-trans, which is sort of the main line of like the Episcopal and Methodist churches and things like that, and Lutheran churches. They don't ever come under attack.
I had E. Michael Jones on the other night.
Yeah.
And it was my first time talking to him ever, actually. And he is completely... I mean, you know what he's like, right?
Yeah.
His thing on race is, yeah. So he thinks that it's all about Catholics versus, the real divide is Catholics versus Protestants. Yeah.
Well, I would say, why don't Catholics and Protestants? I disagree. I think the real issue is racial. I think the real issue is this other group, which sometimes is looked at religiously, sometimes looked at ethnically. Generally controls the media, controls the political discourse, and Catholics and Protestants, I think white Catholics and Protestants don't have anything to fight about really in America. And it's silly to make that. Why would you divide white people that way? It doesn't make any sense. On top of that, I would say making the issue that Catholics are the ones that are sort of under attack, I think doesn't really cut it, because if you wanted to make a case like that, well, why is it that Catholics have more people on the Supreme Court? There's only one white Protestant on the Supreme Court. I think there's like three or four Catholics. Not that they actually exercise any power to the benefit of Catholics, but they have that level of representation. So I would argue that you can't make accurate predictions on how things are going to go based on the idea that like Catholics are being oppressed, or that Catholics are the main target here, particularly when the Catholic Church itself is happy to work with anti-whites and is in fact does many anti-white things, says many anti-white things itself. And I know right-wing Catholics, pro-white Catholics don't agree with that. I'm not interested in getting into that argument, but I would say that that's not the main issue. The main issue is race. And all you really have to do is look at the U.S. media, look at the institutions, and look at how they operate, and look at how it's so easy to predict what they're going to do based on the fact that it's whites always that are targeted. And when I spoke with E. Michael Jones, who I have a great deal of respect for, you know, what he said to me was, well, if you're arguing on the basis of white, you're just, no one's going to be on your side. That was his argument. And I was like, but that's not a principled argument.
No, it's also a bit silly, because the thing is, I should have thought to say this to him during our stream the other day. No one ever talks about Protestant privilege.
No,
or
it's absurd.
Or whatever.
It's ridiculous.
Catholic privilege, because he thinks that Catholics are the ones under attack, because that's his group.
Well, to the extent they're white, they are, but that's a proxy. But it's not even really much of one, because the Catholic Church has been very cooperative with much of the anti-whiteness is going on, so...
Yeah, exactly. I just don't know I really did. See, this is what it was like with him. I just sort of gave up about 20 minutes in. I thought, not going to get anywhere here. So I just sort of asked him his views on things, but didn't bother really debating.
Yeah, I mean, he's not really what I would consider anybody that is my enemy or somebody that I feel like I need to go against. No. He's written a number of very excellent books. You should read the that particular group's revolutionary heritage. I don't know how to rephrase it.
It's absurd, isn't it?
Particular group's revolutionary tradition and how it shapes the world. But yeah, that's a great book, as well as Slaughter of Cities is a fantastic book, which actually makes racial arguments.
Well, he seemed to understand that race is a real thing. He just doesn't think that it can or should be the basis of identity.
Well, that's I would say that the only argument I would have in response to that would be fine. That's if you want to hold that as an ideal for a perfect world, but right now, whites are under attack, and right now if you want to preserve a Catholicism that holds the values that you hold, you have to preserve whites because they're the ones that hold those values. White Catholics are the ones that perpetuate those values in the Catholic Church. So you would have a other interest in first of all, you shouldn't want any race to be harmed if you're a Catholic. Generally speaking, you shouldn't agree with that kind of thing generally. But also, whites are the ones that uphold these values that you agree with. So there's no contradiction there, in my opinion. I certainly don't see why there would have to be. I don't think there has to be. And I would just say that you can be Catholic and pro-white. There's nothing wrong with it. I don't exclude Catholics, and I don't have any intention to, and I just don't think that it's really – we shouldn't be fighting on those grounds. We have much bigger fish to fry, so to speak. And I know on Friday, Catholics, they like their fish.
Yeah. Well, I completely agree. It's just the same thing with the Christian versus pagan. You know, it just goes on and on. And I just think,
well, here's the thing. So we have a pagan temple. Now, again, I'm not a pagan. I'm not really, I'm a baptized Christian, catechized Lutheran, but I'm not really much of a practicing Christian, raised in the Episcopal Church. But we have this pagan temple, the Asatru Folk Assembly, which is a Norse, a sort of a deriving from a Norse Germanic heritage pagan group that bought a church building in a small town in Minnesota over the summer. And they recently actually got the rights from the city council to occupy the building and use it as a religious building. And actually the city council, this tiny town, about 300 people live in this town. And they voted 3-1 to give them the right, and it's their constitutional right to practice their religion. But there was this big controversy, and many members of this particular group are trying to raise a fuss, saying, because of course it's this branch of that group. I know there are different branches of this tradition, but this particular branch is whites only, and they say it's because look, we're not about hating any, and they're telling the truth, not about hating any other group. But this is a religious tradition that is linked to our white Northern European ancestry. And so we want people of that ancestry to be the members of our church. Now, interestingly enough, our friends in that particular group have much the same view of their religion, yet nobody would dare to stop them from erecting one of their temples. But they have mounted a massive PR campaign for a small temple in a small town, and it's particularly because it is a whites only religious tradition. Now, if it's not whites that are the target, why do they care? Why are they putting in all this effort for this tiny little church in this tiny little town if whites themselves as a race are not the target?
Yeah, something that I think white people really struggle to grasp, especially white people, is that they're a group can actually fight for its rights or fight for its own well-being by fighting against other groups, even in the minutiae of a temple being set up in a tiny town with 300 people. It'll probably be a few hundred of them who'll ever use this temple, the pagans. But nonetheless, that's of interest to an opposing group. Yep. Because that temple will give them a sense of solidarity, a sense of progress, a sense of strength.
It gives them organization, direction, community, etc. Yeah. All the things
And I think the individualist whites just cannot fathom that they're so out of thinking like that that they can't understand. It doesn't make sense to them.
They can't even process it. And to the point, and they'll fall down on, and what they'll do is they'll fall on to certain kind of rhetorical tricks that get them out of having to do anything. Like individualists, like particularly ideological individualists, will be like, well, I'll just go with our friend here. No offense to him, although I'm going to do a little imitation. I think that anybody should practice whatever religion they like on private property. Right? Like that. But again, but you're not fighting for it, though. You say that. Go and fight for their right to do it then.
Yes.
If you really believe it. Like if you really, really believe that, go. Don't just say it on the internet comment section. Go and protest against the people attacking them. And then you'd be like, but I also think it's really dumb to have a racial religion. Okay, well, tell that to our friends in the particular group then.
Yes.
Because that's what they have.
Yeah, I mean, I know that I'm just thinking about could that be used against me if I agree with that statement? Because I know that you can convert into Judaism, into that particular group and whatever. But I also know
though? I mean, effectively. I mean, one of the things that was interesting is the way this was presented. Was that people in this small town, which, wow, amazingly, it's had an influx of Hispanic immigrants in the last 20 years. Wow, how did that happen? Was that with the, and the funny thing is, the people of that town, were they demanding these? Were they like, did they have a vote in the town council? We would like, please, more Hispanic immigrants in our town. Thank you. That never happened. No, what happened is that these people were brought there by big business interests, and these people simply had no way of pushing back on that. And now they're saying, now you have mostly women. And again, in all the pictures I've seen of the so-called protests, it's only been women are saying, well, we support the Hispanics against this temple. I'm like, is that even a dichotomy the people from that temple are interested in pushing? Are they telling you kick the Hispanics out? They're not even saying that. They are just using the building for their own religious purposes. That's it. That is it. And those Hispanics would not be welcome in a synagogue either. I'm not running any risk by saying this is the absolute truth. They would not be. And why is it that a religion, and the other thing is now all of a sudden then you bring in this issue. Oh, well, you have to be able to convert into a religion in order for it to be legit. Why? Where does that come from? What rule is that in the Constitution? It doesn't say anything in the Constitution like that. I mean, first of all, you really can't convert into that other group. I mean, it's very difficult. You typically have to marry somebody or something like that. You can't just be like, I would like to be a member. No. And in their state, in their country, they have blood tests to determine your genetic compatibility. If you claim you are one of them and you want to migrate there, they will give you a blood test to determine your genetic compatibility to be a member of their state. So you can't pretend to me this isn't a racial thing. It's totally racial, which is why that's how they want to prevent a competing group, us, from organizing. It's very simple.
So I know that just on the DNA test thing, I know that that has definitely I know it's definitely happened. It's definitely been authorized by a judge to happen, but I don't know if it's mandatory. Like it's the, but anyway, it doesn't.
Well, really, there's sometimes it's just there's no question. Like if you're like Murray Schulzberg from 52nd Street in New York, like they're not really going to freaking bother you too much about it, right? You know.
Yeah. All right. So to get back to the situation with America. So you said that this brings clarity. Now you and I were talking about this a few weeks ago, and you said that this is good because it will enable people to let go of the Trump thing.
Yes.
And but before we get to that, the election, you think that there was a bit of fraud, but nothing.
There's fraud all the time. And I think that the fraud, it could be, look, the thing is we'll never know. And I actually, on some level, Trump did try to push back on this. Like they did raise certain alarm bells that it's like, but the problem is the way the election was structured, it's like, it was never going to be, it was never going to be that you can't find out the fraud because essentially they've essentially set up U.S. elections so that no vote is fraudulent and there's no way to find out that a vote is fraudulent. And there have been efforts to try and introduce certain restrictions on voting, like voter ID laws or other things where people fraudulent registrations are purged from the voter rolls and such like that. Because you would be surprised. In America, you don't have to have any ID to vote. which again, and you would be amazed at the sort of, shall I say it, Rube Goldberg machine ways of registering people that they use in order to not ask for ID. When I went to register to vote, for the only time I ever voted for president in my life, it's 2016, to vote for Trump, register as a Republican, to vote in the primary in New York State, I went to the office and I filled out a form and they're like, name and address for registration. I was like, okay, here's my ID. And they were like, whoa, easy. Don't show us that. We are literally not, we'll get in trouble if you are seen showing us that ID. We can get in trouble. Fuck. And so literally anybody could go in there. And supposedly what they do then is they verify these some other way. After you filled out the form, when you go fill out your registration form, you don't have to show any ID and you don't have to give your social security number, anything. It's just your name and address. And then you give it to them and then you are assigned your polling place. You get stuff then in the mail because you give them your address. You get stuff in the mail that gives you your polling place where you're supposed to go and vote. And when you go there, your name is on a list. And when you say, I'm so-and-so, they check that name off the list and you go and you vote. At no point is an ID ever checked, ever. And so you can imagine how this could be used for fraud. I mean, you can already think in your own mind how this could happen. And in fact, in New York City, there have been people caught on camera. Interestingly enough, Laura Loomer, a long time ago, our good friend, did a thing for Project Veritas where she caught someone from the New York City Council on camera talking about how the Democrat Party in New York City basically fills a bus with African Americans and drives them to various polling locations to vote as whatever names they have registered at that polling location. And this is a thing that is done all over the country.
It's like a fucking circus.
So I don't even know how you would know who voted. Like, this is the problem. And this has been a problem for a very long time, and it's already been set up this way. So it's like, under those parameters, Trump still actually managed to win in 2016, which is amazing. And yet somehow in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, actually, there was a lot of stuff going on in Pennsylvania and Philadelphia, particularly in the first election. But this election, I mean, I think given the way voting works in the United States, which is already kind of like inherently fraudulent, given those parameters, I think Biden just won. But I do think there was a this whole mail-in thing. I mean, if it were up to me, I would be like, you vote on election day, period. You get there at the right time, period. And if you don't, then you're that's it. All these efforts made, and they completely pander to all these non-white groups. I mean, they make a specific effort to get these people voting. And it's like, and it's not even to say that there's some anti-Republican conspiracy when actually Trump significantly increased the amounts of blacks and Latinos that are voting for him. And in fact, Latinos are even tilting more towards the Republican Party in recent years, which is
not conservatives, aren't they?
Well, that's going to happen. I think that is going to be the way, because a lot of people thought at the very least for self-preservation, the Republican Party will have to tilt white, but they didn't. They didn't. Trump came in, he won based on doing that, and then he didn't do it, and he lost.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's fraud. There's fraud all the time. There's constant fraud.
But Pat Cannon in the early 2000s who said this, that the Republican Party would rather lose than go...
Oh, 100%. And so given that, I think they should lose. Like, I think given, and also I think Trump, another 4 years of Trump would have been, this is controversial, I think it would have been worse for the pro-white movement. I think it would have been worse.
Right.
Because it would have been another 4 years of people saying, of people not knowing, do we go with Trump? Or do we support, are we essentially open about who we are? Or do we go for Trump? Because I remember the movement before Trump. Like, I was in the movement for like about 2 years, the pro-white movement in the United States, before Trump even came on the radar screen, from 2014 to 2016. And there was no fight. There was infighting and stupid stuff, but nothing about that kind of stuff. Everybody was, the Republican Party, screw them. And I want those days back. Because that's how we need to be. Yeah. I mean, that's just how we need to be. Like, it's just, imagine if we, well, people say, oh, Trump did allow this growth and stuff. I think there was a lot of intertwined phenomena, which I'm not going to say he wasn't part of. He definitely was part of raising a lot of white consciousness, which is, again, one of the reasons why a certain faction of our friends were very interested in getting him out of power. In fact, to the point where, you know, they pulled out all the stops. And look, I'm not saying there's no fraud. I'm just saying you can't actually prove, they set this up in a way that it is impossible to prove any instance of it. So it's like, what's, and in fact, this was shown in Trump losing basically every court case that he brought, in which many cases he didn't even allege fraud. They just said, like, they changed these rules. That was most of their court cases were saying, like, they changed the rules for voting and they're not supposed to do that. Therefore, the votes cast under the changed rules must be thrown out. And the courts universally decided, well, okay, theoretically, even if they did change these rules improperly, the remedy of destroying all of these votes is too unfair to the citizens to do it. So, like, that's their argument. And that was always going to be an argument. And they never, a lot of people looked at this in a way they think, like, okay, if you can show that said rule was changed theoretically unconstitutionally by a state constitution, let's say that happened, that means that all those votes have to go. That's not necessarily true. Because the courts say no, because the remedy, you have to, because again, when you go to court, you have to have a case and a remedy, and the court has to be able to provide it. The court's like, you want us to wipe out 2 million votes because of a minor infraction on a rule change? Like, we're not going to do that. We just won't do that. That's a remedy that goes way far and does more damage than the initial problem. So they just won't do it. And so this was a doomed thing from the beginning. And I also think that, you know, Trump, he lost four states that he had won by similar margins that he won them by. Because, and look, we saw the shift. White men in particular shifted away from Trump. And it's understandable why they did. Because if you're actually a blue-collar white guy in a Midwestern state, if you look at the Trump's history and his past and you're like, okay, look at how he's governed. He's done nothing for us. He's done everything for big business, done everything for his friends, nothing for us. And Biden might give me health care or something like that. Or he might give me COVID relief. He might give me worker benefits in some way. So therefore, even though he's a total scumbag, I'll just do that because I don't have a better option. And it looks like about a number of people made that calculation and did shift. So I blame Trump himself. He should have doubled and tripled down.
Oh, of course he should have.
And he would have won.
I blame him as well. I mean, I think this is the thing. If politicians just ignored the media and served the public, it would actually, in the case of right-wing or nationalist politicians, it would just secure them certain victory time after time after time.
Well, this is the most amazing thing about U.S. policy, I guess politics generally in Europe too. Just do the right thing. You still can have money and power. Like, even if you're totally venal and you're completely like self-interested, like, you could actually do the right thing and you still have money and power. But the problem is that the interest groups arrayed against you, if you try to do the right thing by the white populations of America and Europe, are so strong that it's easier to go with the flow that they're presenting you with and go in on their scam and collect their money and their privileges than it is to actually go and help out the people. Even though in a system absent such pressure, there was no reason why a Democratic or Republican leader couldn't just be like, Here's for the people, and you know, which is what actually our friends in this particular group call populism, dangerous populism, fascism, demagoguery, etc., etc. Like, and they always talk about how it's dangerous when politicians start going towards a territory of like giving people what they want. It's really interesting how they do that. It's sort of like,
what the fuck?
it's really funny because for them it's like, you hear this bandied about a lot in the United States, democratic institutions, the institutions of democracy. I'm like, well, democracy is supposed to mean rule of the people. Institutions, no, that's, you're literally talking about rule by institutions, which is a form of oligarchy, which is what we actually have, and who controls the institutions? It's our friends from a particular group. So
yes,
so that's what they mean. I mean, whenever I hear that phrase, democratic rule, democracy, or the institutions of democracy, they just mean our group's particular power. And that's it. That's what they're talking about.
Yeah. So I'm not sure what to say to that. But
I think it's much the same in the UK.
Well, probably is. So at this point, then, going forward, things are, what do you see? Because people are asking several questions related to this. Basically, what do you think is the future for America in this coming year and then the next 5 years, the next 10 years, etc.?
Oh, man. I don't know. I mean, right now, the immediate thing is this COVID thing. And if the restrictions in place are going to be let up, this is lasting a lot longer than I ever thought it was going to. And
let's talk about COVID. I mean, that's again, you know, on YouTube, you got to be fucking careful what you say.
That's almost even more of a tripwire, because it's like right away, boom, you're like disseminating information dangerous to the public health or blah blah blah,
threatening democracy with conspiracy theories and so on. So
I'm not even really doing that. I'm just thinking my thing is like, I'm going to go ahead and say, like, let's say it's real. Like, why have people gotten no unemployment benefits since September? Why is, like, the only relief you're offering these petty small amounts in checks to people, and then the federal unemployment aid, which was going $600 a week to unemployed people, ended at the end of September, and it has not come back? And people are still suffering, and now you are talking about shutting things down yet again. And now this time, only thing on offer is $300 a week, which half the amount.
It's just a bad situation, isn't it?
So my thing is, like, if the government really didn't want conspiracy theories, if they really didn't want people going like COVID is fake, here, let me explain this to you in a way that avoids that kind of thinking. If you're a liberal, you're an upper middle class libtard. Say you're a libtard. You work at some liptarded corporation that believes in woke crap, and you commute by your computer. You sit at your laptop from your desk in your gym jams, and you get to take your muscle relaxants and your antidepressants right there at your home desk, and you can sit there, you know, and you can pop your Pfizer pills or whatever it might be right there from the comfort of your own desk. You don't even have to put on pants. You can sit there in your underwear telecommuting for your Zoom calls and whatnot. Very easy for you. Your income isn't impacted. It's very easy for you. Oh, this is a real thing. This is very important and very serious. Meanwhile, if you're someone that works with your hands, if you work a trade, if you're working class, if you work in a factory, if you work in trucking, or if you work in an outside trade, you work something real, or even if you're like a service worker, you have to work behind a counter. You are a hairdresser or something like that, or maybe a cashier or something like that. You're screwed. So basically, you can't believe in it. If your entire livelihood is based around going to work in a situation where you're in a people-facing job, or you're in a trade or manual labor, and it is directly threatened by COVID shutdowns, you are being asked to say, my life is being destroyed and it's totally legit. So you cannot ask people to think that way. Real or not, the government and the powers that be in this country, the establishment, big capital, whatever you want to say, cannot expect people whose incomes and livelihoods are directly threatened to believe in something as legitimate that is destroying their life. You can't ask people. They simply won't. And it's very easy for libtards who work for, like, crappy, you know, stockbroking or media companies that sit there on their Zoom calls and read emails for a living. Literally, there's people that read emails for a living that think they have something to say about anything. Very easy for them to sit there and finger wag at people. But what are they actually doing to advocate for these people? Why not, instead of breaking the balls of the red hat wearing guy that doesn't want to wear a mask and wants to go back to work, why not actually go after the government for real relief for these people? Because if there's no – look, if you want to cut down on conspiracy theories, just destroy fewer people's lives.
Yeah.
The more lives you destroy, the more conspiracies you're going to get.
That also make it more convincing. I mean, this virus is obviously not dangerous. It's obviously nowhere near as dangerous as they're telling us it is.
Right.
Yeah. And so all these people's livelihoods are being destroyed. on an obviously false pretext.
Right,
obviously,
exactly.
Blatantly. I mean, this is the biggest insult of it of all, is that you're supposed to go along with this in the face of copious evidence that this is obviously bullshit.
And the fact that it's also like keeping a lot of people from working. So those two things together, like, it's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
It's just not going to happen. So that's why, look, if people are wondering, why are so many people conspiracy theories? It's because one, it's not that convincing. It was convincing for the first couple of months. After that, it started to get a bit iffy. And now it's like, no. You know, now you're like the woman I go to for a haircut. Last time I spoke with her, she was desperately worried about getting shut down again, which now she has been. And that's how she lives. That's her living.
Yeah. Yeah.
What is she going to do? And she got kids.
She's going to get $300 a week.
I don't know. She has her own business. Does that count? I actually don't know.
Yeah. It's a mental situation. I don't even know what to say about it now. I know, of course, there is also, well, I guess this is the whole point, that they're gearing people towards being desperate for the vaccine, because then that will finally put an end to all of this pain.
It's working. There's a lot of people, like, even amongst the people that are, like, you would think would be the most suspicious, they cannot wait. A lot of these small business people particularly are like, oh, vaccine, at least finally it'll be over. But I'm like, given the kinds of groups that have gotten, the other thing is there's this thing of like certain interests have gained power from this. So regardless of the truth of it, they're not going to give it up. They like it. They love it. And it's also been made into a culture war thing where it's like conservatives are the conspiracy theorists and liberals are like the responsible, civic-minded people.
I'm science-minded.
But it's like, yeah, but dude, liberals don't believe in science. But trust me, like, believe me, they don't. Like, I can give you any number of examples of them just not. Many of them probably break the terms of whatever service we're dealing with here. But certainly, we could talk about issues with hormones and surgeries and things like that. Obviously, not believing in science on that account. Certainly, evolutionary things. There's certain things you definitely don't believe in science related to that. Yeah. So, yeah, liberals don't believe in science. That's bogus. And to them, science is a religion anyway. It's like they say science, but they mean like my particular special set of beliefs. It's bogus. It's total crap.
Yeah, yeah. Of course. But so how did we get onto that? They were saying, oh, yeah, so this is how they so it's become a culture war thing.
Yeah.
There you go. I'm amazed at how much this has just slipped straight into.
Why did the media do that? Why would the media do this? Why would they create a culture war around something like this if it's really an emergency? Why would you even do that? Because this is a media-generated phenomena.
Well, there's that thing about the Amish saying that they haven't been affected by COVID because they don't have TV. I don't know if that's apocryphal or not.
Oh, I've never heard that before, actually. I wouldn't be surprised if they haven't been affected just because they don't interact much with other communities, although they do somewhat. They do have interactions with outsiders in areas where they live. They have stores and shops and stuff, so I don't know.
Well, yeah, so the point is that COVID has become a quasi-religious thing at this point. Within the space of a year, it's... Of course, in Britain, we've also got the NHS thing, which immediately makes me think of you, the death panel on from quite a long time ago.
Yeah, we took that name to make fun of the idea of like people freaking. I mean, it just was a funny thing to say, but
they were libertarian face.
Well, I wouldn't even say so. It's just funny. Like, it's just a funny thing to call you. Yeah.
There was a thing at that time that the NHS had death panels, which I think wasn't.
I think we were probably making fun of that as well as, like, it was just a tongue in cheek thing. I think we were making fun of everybody involved more likely than anything. We weren't like doing a libertarian, like, they're going to have death panels. We were more just like, yeah, death panels is funny. We were more just like, why they should have death panels.
And it does sound like a funny name for a bunch of people who are going to talk about that week's current affairs, you know, the death panel. It was hilarious.
It's still pretty, I mean, we still call ourselves that.
Ah, right, okay. It's a a thing where it's an example of that kind of humor that is obviously you're famous for. But, So a quasi religion. And I think it is another way to, well, this is the thing. I don't think it's going to stop.
Well, what's the incentive for it to stop? I mean, this is my thing. It's like, I like to look at social phenomena in terms of like, in actually a fairly, I don't know, materialistic way, like not maybe materialistic, but like who benefits is kind of the question I ask. And I'm seeing various groups benefit, and I don't see that. And they have power. They had power and they have power. And I don't, and there have been some powerful groups that have been hurt as well. But like, for example, the movie industry has been hurt by this.
Hugely. I've seen,
which I'm fine with. That's great. I would love the movie industry to die altogether. That, if that happened, that would be one actual good benefit of this. But again, whether it would be worth the rest of it, I don't know.
Yeah.
But the question for me is, like, who's benefiting and how? And well, and what's their interest? And
it's Big Pharma, isn't it? Surely.
It's them, but it's not only them.
Of course.
There's a number of groups. There's also, you got to look at emotional benefits as well. Like there's monetary, like liberals benefit emotionally from this hugely because they get, you can't underrate the status. Like, because again, American politics have almost been calibrated to every issue falls down along this contrived liberal conservative line. And they have these people. And this is why I urge people to stop buying into it. Like, I think people have to break out of it. And I actually think it's actually increasingly as likely that someone who was a liberal would come to our point of view as someone who was a conservative. It's maybe not quite as much, but it does happen. And I've been seeing it more often. And so I would say we can't totally like kind of just reinforce one side of that dichotomy. We have to break it apart and we have to say, like, why does this even exist? And really, one of the reasons it exists is so that through media-generated campaigns, one side or the other can be given emotional satisfaction without ever getting any policy that they actually want. Like, so you can get, like, liberals derive intense emotional satisfaction. Like, liberals go out waiting to find, like, big truck conservative guy with Trump flag not wearing a mask so they can... Put your mask on. They can't wait. They love it. They cannot wait for there are liberals that go out every morning. They won't admit it to themselves, but they know really they just want to wag their finger and chastise somebody else. That's it.
Yes.
And we already know about owning the libtards as a benefit unto itself. I mean, we don't have to explain that to anybody. So this is a thing where now you have these groups who you don't have to do anything for either of these groups. If you're the people in power, you don't have to actually give any of them any of their policy preferences. You can keep going with the same business as usual neoliberal paradigm. And they each derive, just give them nugget. That's what Trump did. He was like, here, let me give you the satisfaction of calling the people you hate morons. And that's all you'll ever get. Yeah. So that's part of it. I mean, reinforcing those paradigms are part of it. And as likely, like, I've even talked to people like, yeah, you know, I like walking around without a mask so libtards can see me and get all pissed. And I'm like, yeah, that's right. And I'm like, wow. Okay. I mean, I'm not going to deny doing that myself, but like, also it's like, is this,
yeah, it's like when people say, well, I enjoy using the term colored people because it triggers the libs. Well, okay, good for you.
They call themselves that now.
Yeah, exactly. You said that there are people who are coming to, I don't know what you'd call it, well, the NJP from the left. Did you?
Well, there's been people, I don't know about the NJP specifically, but there's been people that have over the years come into this thing from the left. It's been less, but it's not unheard of. In fact, there are mainly I'm thinking of people that have written me letters as TRS fans, written emails and letters. And we do get handwritten mail. We actually get it quite often. And a lot of times we get several pages where people will explain. And I'm sorry for those of you who we don't actually write physical letters back. I'm sorry, but we do get your letters and read them. And we have a lot.
It must be quite nice to get.
It is nice. Sometimes. Yeah. Sometimes it's like it's like pages of like, here's why you're wrong on this thing. And just, you can only imagine.
I wouldn't enjoy that. Yeah.
Well, but sometimes we just get guys telling us about how they came to the beliefs and who they are and what they're about. And that's interesting. I always like to see that. And yeah, we've gotten guys that were liberals, frankly, a lot of them. And they've even said there's certain types of things that we've said that they responded to by because we actually weren't triggering those same exact points that a conservative would. We sort of like went beyond, surpassed, or circumvented all of those conservative points that would have triggered them and into their defensiveness, and was able to get around it and actually hit with something that mattered. I think that's why we have to really always do that. That's one of the things I always want to do. Not that I'm always looking for like the novelty take, but I want to make sure. First of all, I know conservatism is a contrived thing and its narratives are contrived. So if I find myself like, and it's not even something I really do anymore, but when you see the kinds of things they're saying, you're like, we have to avoid that. We got to steer around that, because one, it's dumb usually, but two, it sets up like this barrier to like people that are triggered by that stuff to listen to you. And you can get to people, you can get to people with the kind of stuff that we talk about, because it's intelligent and it's truthful and it rings true and it's not stupid. It's not like, contrived or dumb. So yeah.
Yeah, I think that the one thing that we always have on our side is that we are the more truthful. I mean, I'm not going to say that everything that we say is just pure, unvarnished truth. But I think, because, we're human, we're fallible like anyone else. But we're not bullshitting. And I think that this is why they have to censor us all the time.
Right. And even with COVID, I've been iffy on going totally with some of the conspiracy narratives, because I'm just not sure. And so, like, one thing I can be sure about, like, I'm not a doctor, and I can't make with any confidence pronouncements about like safety of vaccines or anything like that. I would urge people to use their own individual autonomy with that and make your own decision. I'll just tell you what I'm not going to be taking this vaccine. And that's just my personal thing. If someone decided they want to take it, I wouldn't chastise them for it either, but I urge everyone to make their own mind up about that. But I am not qualified to tell you. I can't say anything about that. So what I'll say is, I'll look at it politically. I do feel confident to talk about the politics of it, and I can also talk about the mentality that certain people bring to the table with it. Obviously, I think the disease is not as dangerous as they have said it was. I don't think it's totally fake. But I think that the most important thing is, like I said, the point I made before, which is the one I always try and come back to, is that like the government and the powers that be cannot actually pretend to be surprised at people not believing in something when belief in that would mean that they would have to agree that the destruction of their livelihood and their life was something that was legitimate. That's just impossible. So if they want people to believe it, here's what you can do. If you won't do it, what's really going on? If you refuse to do it, if in fact for months you set up this phony debate between Mitch McConnell and Nancy Pelosi and whoever else about, oh, we're going to do 1,200. No, we're going to do 600. No, we're going to do 300. No, we're not going to do anything. It's literally like the meme of the guy jumping out the window where he's like, what do you need $1,200 for? What do you mean $600? $300? You don't need $300. What do you mean $500 million for Israel? That's fine. That'll work. Like, yes. That's how I look at this. It's like, what you can't expect. Look, if the government wants to be believed, they have to act in a way that is trustworthy to the citizens, and they're not doing it. And the same with all these institutions. These institutions cannot systematically racially attack white people and then come up with this, whoa, this crazy thing. Now we're super concerned about your welfare. Take this vaccine and stay home. No one's going to believe you.
Well, I mean, I hope not. I hope they don't believe it. It's I just feel that this year has been this tissue of lies being woven all the fucking time, and it surprises me how many people in Britain fall for it completely. I mean, it's, yeah, I don't know what to say about that. I think that people are just very social animals, and they rely on consensus, and they want to believe, and that's the other thing, they want to believe that their leaders are on their side. They don't want to believe, oh fuck, I'm actually on my own. My leaders aren't looking after me, and in fact, they've actually got it in for me. Because that's a fucking, if you're not used to thinking in those terms, it's a fucking terrifying realization.
Yeah, it's very difficult for people to, and that's another thing in America too, where it's not even just like what it is. It's not even just like, oh, they're liars and incompetents. People, everyone will agree, yeah, politicians are liars and incompetents, blah, blah. But I'm like, yeah, but what if they're not? What if they're not incompetent? What if they're actually accomplishing what they want to?
Yeah,
that's
exactly. It's a cope. It's a cope to think that, well, they're just, this is just a clown show. It is on one
hand. There are clowny elements to it,
but also nothing happens by accident, and especially not in this elongated fashion. It's, come on, there are checks and balances.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's difficult for people to come to grips with that, but it's also difficult to understand, like, you know, that as a race, like, whites are kind of a target of this system, and yet there's ample evidence of it. I mean, just the demographic situation generally, like in America, we've gone from roughly 85% to just a little bit over 60%, and we don't even know what the 2020 census is going to show. I know in Britain, London is now minority white or plurality white, maybe it's less than 50% white, which, you know, I don't know when. I don't know how long that happened. That took maybe, what, 30, 40 years or so for that to happen?
Yeah, that was the case in the 2011 census, which came out in 2012. The results. We've known that for 8 years now, that it's 45%, but I can't remember if it's 45% white or white British. I can't recall off the top.
That's the other thing, because there's non-British whites as well, which is less of a problem, but still, you know, in Europe where national identity, in America it's like whatever, because white, you know, we're white and we're all kind of mixed together. People have multiple nationalities and such, and people in Europe also have multiple nationalities. I mean, that's not unheard of, but you know, nationality is important there as well as race, and I don't, those two things kind of are, they sort of like, in the same circle, they're like in the concentric circle type thing you could talk about. But like, but Americans, it's like, we're Americans. I mean, you can tell an American when you meet them, they're more American than they are Polish or German or whatever their ancestry is. So that's what we are. We're Americans. We're white Americans. That's who we are. And there's nothing wrong with identifying as that, particularly when it's under attack. But the race is also under attack in Europe as well. And so that's a difficult thing to get through your head, but that's not the only thing that would prove this fact. Another thing I would say would be the very fact that this little temple in this little town can't have their religious freedom without being all kinds of crap being stirred up against them. Another thing being this constant anti-white diversity and racial sensitivity training, which is only aimed at white people. I mean, are you teaching blacks to be racially sensitive? I mean, is that what they're doing? No, yeah, no, absolutely not. And like, so when racial sensitivity training happens, that is anti-white training.
Exactly. It's only against white
people. Yeah. And that's what, and people understand that when they're subjected to it, but it's difficult to see, like, okay, now extrapolate that. That is a systemic problem. It is literally systemic racism against us. That is a term the left likes to bandy about, but in fact, the only people subjected to it are us. And in fact, other groups are racially systemically privileged.
Yes.
And the only way to be systemically privileged if you're white is to become gay.
Well, yes. What was it? Homosexuality is the last stand of implicit white identity.
It's the last stand of actually finding a way to get a government privilege if you're white.
Yeah. Yes, yes. I'm not taking the piss. He was actually correct.
I don't know if that's what he was saying with that.
It was the last bastion of him. It was basically what he meant was, it's the last way that you can get away with being white.
I'm not even willing to say that because I'm not sure about that. I just don't know, so I'm not going to say what it was or not.
I'm pretty sure that's what he meant.
If that's what he meant, well, that was another one of those things where he's like, here, let me say something just to take the piss deliberately, vaguely, and wow, look at all the people that are mad now. Ha ha ha. You know, I don't know.
Yeah. All right.
But I don't know. But I will say this now, for me, that's not worth it. And for, you know, most men, that's not worth it either. Like, but it's something that is, it's first, like, nobody should do that. But like, it's, and very few people even understand that as that thing. But interestingly enough, some people do get that message. In particular, now with this trans thing, a lot of children actually do get the message that by becoming so-called trans, you now are not only privileged, but you can wield power. And there's instances where teachers say, like, oh man, these kids that claim that they're trans are just totally abusive towards their teachers, because they can be, because they don't have to mind their teachers at all anymore. Now they've found the thing, anything that, you know, I saw black kids do this when I was in school, when I was a kid, before trans was even a thing, or it was maybe a thing, but it wasn't like a big thing. You know, nobody would dream of ever doing that when I was a kid. But blacks would always, anytime they were disciplined, that's racist. And the teachers used to laugh at it, but in this environment, I don't think that they do. So when you let people have that constant get out of jail free card, they're just going to become abusive. They just will. And of course, who is the people you get to abuse? White people.
Exactly. All right, let's get to some questions.
Okay.
Question for Woz and Enoch. Do you find the growth of conspiracy theories worrying? The Nashville RV bomber believed he was fighting against 5G towers that were frying his pituitary gland.
I think yes, and I would say that a lot of conspiracy theories that I see now, I don't know if that's true. That could be true. That's very well possible. I heard that he was afraid of government surveillance. That's the most I heard about that. And I did have some stuff looking into that. Probably talk about it more on Tedious tomorrow. I don't have all my notes on that collected here, but certainly it looked like the guy that did that was actually not trying to hurt people. I'll give him a lot of credit for that. Not trying to hurt people, and was trying to hit infrastructure. And in fact, he didn't kill anybody. So there's that, which he made a big effort not to do. But that incident alone, I've also heard he was trying to hit an NSA data relay tower or data relay center, which is in that building. But I don't know if that's true either. But I'll say this. I think conspiracy theories, you can always tell a conspiracy theory is useless when it's spooky and it doesn't shed any actual light on a topic. And you'll see this quite often. Like, you're like, okay, so you're saying, like, for the RV bomber, exactly, this thing, for example, I'll give you an example so you've seen this type of thing. I saw stuff circulating online last night, videos where people were like, the explosion didn't actually come from the RV. And there's a video of circles like RV, and then the explosion's like on the other side of the frame. And I'm like, again, that's exactly what I'm talking about. Like, even if true, what light does this shed on the subject? And you'll see a lot of the conspiracy theory stuff, particularly the QAnon stuff, which is a lot of it is like high level stupid.
Just for that last one. So the idea is that it was set up by someone else, and the bomb didn't. So this person who set it up, this other person, couldn't manage to get the bomb inside the RV. That's a bit fucking stupid, isn't it?
Well, the idea would be they're just lying about. I mean, one thing I could say. Okay, so the RV is like a patsy. It essentially would be the upshot of that one, right? Like the RV guy. That's just they're saying it's that and it's something else entirely, right, or something like that, right? But it doesn't really shed any light on it. And I would say that there's a lot of conspiracy stuff that's like that. And it's spooky and it's intriguing. And they've got video and a lot of times they've got photo stuff. And they're like, look at this. And, like, you know, but it doesn't really shed any light on the topic. And I would say, like, we can actually find things. And a lot of times they're dead ends. These conspiracy theories are dead ends. Like, for example, with the 9/11 stuff, a lot of people were into, like, no planes. And holograms did it or something like that. And I'm like, it was like bombs in the towers, no planes, and then the planes were holograms or something. I'm like, all right, see, the problem is if you do that, you cut the investigation into this whole incident off because there's no planes. So now the people that were on those planes, and who they worked for and what their connections were are irrelevant to your entire, the rest of what you're doing. You're going to be looking for people with like hologram projectors, which don't exist on the top of buildings. So that's obviously, and I actually did myself a little research into people promoting no plane style theories for 9/11. And I found there was a tendency for them to belong to a particular group. Just a tendency. Now, this is even like, you can even say, Mike, you're going a deeper level of conspiracy. And maybe I am. But my point is, you got to be wary of conspiracy theory stuff that is spooky, is kind of interesting, and oftentimes has like certain video, like very structured video or photo or like talking points that are kind of really worked out, but it doesn't go anywhere. And in fact, oftentimes it's a red herring. And I think conspiracy theory stuff so often does that. And QAnon is just the worst example of it. I mean, QAnon took the Jeffrey Epstein child sexual exploitation and blackmail ring, literally child molestation and blackmail ring, child rape, really child sexual abuse ring and blackmail. Cause they would allow people to sexually abuse children and then blackmail them with the evidence of this abuse. That's what Jeffrey Epstein did. And he did it on behalf of a certain intelligence agency. Yeah. He did it on behalf of a certain intelligence agency, and it's not the CIA. And so they took that and they made it about like Tom Hanks. And I'm like,
yes,
that's really dumb. And in fact, it's so dumb that it's malicious. Somebody did that to you. Somebody probably in said intelligence agency. And in fact, we actually have a good idea of who the guy putting out a lot of the QAnon stuff. And he is in the Defense Department, a civilian member of the Defense Department named Ezra. Shoot, I forget his name. Ezra something.
Ezra's enough.
He's a member of a certain group. I'll get it, but it slipped my mind. People, maybe someone in the chat will know and point it, but he's a certain member of the Defense Department. He's probably the one who's behind QAnon. It's been thought for a while. So the QAnon stuff is absolutely a red herring. You just got to watch conspiracy theories. Sometimes the guys that are into that are more willing to embrace the kind of stuff that we talk about. But sometimes they're really invested in stuff that is already been presented to them, and they simply want to prove this stuff, and they're really bought in on it. And a lot of that stuff is red herrings that are planted by nefarious actors. So I'm not much of a conspiracy theorist. I also think a lot of this stuff can be explained, and it can be found out with research. I don't think it's all so mysterious. Like, we know about Jeffrey Epstein. So the issue is, why when Jeffrey Epstein comes out, why when that gets revealed and is a topic for the whole public, why now are we talking about Tom Hanks?
Yeah, exactly.
Who's doing that?
Yeah, why have we gone down this cul-de-sac? It's a relevant cul-de-sac, which is just such a typical tactic. All right, here's another one. Donating $3 so Enoch can buy some ranch off Bezos at Amazon. By the way, what is Mike's favorite type of ranch?
Oh, man.
Is this
I
a
like,
meme?
Yes, I'm supposed to be like a huge ranch fan. Now, and I don't even have a ranch in Britain. Not, you know, like ranch dressing.
Oh, indeed, an American guy who was amazed that I'd never heard of ranch. And he kept saying, you've never heard it. You don't know what ranch is. You've never heard of ranch. You never heard of ranch. And I was like,
dude, oh, there's people from the Midwest just like literally put that on everything, which is hilarious. For them, that would be like you saying, like, well, you never heard of chips? You don't know what chips are?
Yeah, that would be very strange indeed.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So now I understand.
I'll just tell this guy. I like Andy Capp's ranch fries. Good. Really bad for you, but really tasty.
Okay.
My favorite ranch-related product. It's probably filled with all kinds of like, it's probably, I'm sure that the person that produces that is like a member of a certain group. And I'm sure that there's all kinds of, you know, bad chemicals in those things, but they taste freaking awesome.
All right. Mike is the juggernaut. He is unrivaled and unstoppable. I miss Mike being on Twitter. Thank you for everything you do, Mike.
No, thank you. That's very nice. I probably will try and get back on. I can't guarantee how long it'll last. I made a thing like it was good to take a Twitter break because every time I looked at Twitter, I would actually wanted to take a break for the election stuff because it wasn't the kind of environment I wanted to wade into, frankly. And I think it's going to be a little bit more of a clear playing field come January. So I'll probably jump on in a new year and I'll see how long I last.
Well, I got banned.
Dude, I've been banned like 15 times.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So have I. I've been banned like 5 times now.
If I could count all the followers I lost, man, you know what? My first account, which was banned in 2016, 25,000 followers in 2016.
That's terrible. Yeah, by now you'd
be. I never got back up to that. My last one, I did hit 20,000 and boom, gone.
That's good though, because you usually, most of your accounts.
Usually it's 10,000.
10K, right. I remember you having 5, 6K when I was there.
Yeah, typically you can get that in like the first couple weeks, but then after that, it's like a slow build. But yeah. I actually got up to 20K in the last account I had, which I also had for like several months. And there are people like, why does he have this account for so long? And I was like, yeah, why? I don't know either. But for whatever reason, I did. And they eventually got it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I got banned about 6 months ago. And for the first time, I just couldn't be bothered creating a new one. I just thought, fuck it. I can't. I was actually quite glad to be off it. Strangely.
Yes, I had that same feel because it was about 6 months for me as well. And I had that same feel where I was like, yes, I'm actually glad. Like, this is like, my head is clear. I'm not always. Also, you get involved in it and you get involved in like certain people on it. And when you're not on it, you realize like, oh, this guy who's being an asshole on Twitter, like, doesn't matter in the least.
Exactly.
He is literally completely, totally irrelevant to anything. Yeah. So, yeah.
You realize how much a lot of the social drama just doesn't actually matter.
Well, Twitter,
it's fine.
Twitter turns people into women. I mean, it literally does. It makes people, I guess I could use the word bitch. It turns people into bitches. It makes people into catty bitches, and it's because it's a platform based on personal clout seeking and aggrandizement, and it totally, the way it operates mitigates against solidarity. It's always one-upsmanship. It's always hottest take. It's always also irony and sarcasm rule the day. And not that I don't use those things. I love irony and sarcasm, but it can also sometimes, if you want to be serious, and somebody comes in and it says something ironic and sarcastic, and they're actually funny, it's like, God, fuck. You know what I'm talking about? Like, I'm trying to be serious, and now this guy just took the piss, and he's actually funny.
Fuck. Yeah, and now
it's ruined. Yeah.
Fuck. Yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about. When you make a serious point and it's something you're quite proud of, you think it's quite perceptive, and then some fucker comes along and it's funny. Yeah. It's annoying.
Yeah, it's worse when it's funny. If it's not funny, it's like, all right, shut up, asshole. But if it's funny, you're like, damn it.
Yeah. I know. I mean, for me, certainly, like, at first, for the first few years that I was on Twitter, I hardly used it. I just used it for headlines and stuff. And then once I started to get scared about my YouTube channel, I took to Twitter as a refuge in, like, early, mid-2018. And that was when I really got quite seriously addicted to the platform. But it was because it was so fun. I mean, not just the endless novelty and new stuff constantly coming up, but also just the opportunity for jokes. I mean, I used to have a great time making jokes and puns and stuff and just having a laugh. It was really fun. And that never, you know, after I lost that original, my real Millennial Woes account, that never came back again.
Yeah, you had quite a number of followers too.
I had 22,000, on the original one. But, you know, that's all I want to make clear to everyone. That's ancient history to me now. It's just a part of my life, a chapter. You know, I don't really miss it anymore. I don't really care at this point. It's just something that I remember fondly, you know, but no, I'm not attached to it. Anyway, questions for Mike. Okay. Someone's saying, have Richard Spencer back on your show and do it on DLive with Entropy.
Okay. I mean, thanks for the suggestion, but I don't think he wants to come back on, but that's fine. Well, and we don't have a D Live actually, but it's something we might do in future. I don't know.
Well, yeah, someone else said that he should I just ignore questions about?
I'd really rather not talk about individual people. Let's talk about like individual. Okay. I'm not. I always do. Like, there are some people who are interested in individual stuff. I think that's kind of not the best way to look at things. Like, I'm happy that people are personal fans of mine. They like me and they like my work and they're supporters. But let's not do personal drama stuff.
Yeah.
Let's just leave it at that. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I agree. As are you. On another note, have you thought about doing the Monday and Wednesday episodes of TDS Live on DLive? It might be a way to make a ton of money from donations, from Super Chats.
We haven't thought about that, but we also don't want to do a we like doing our show as we do it, and I don't think we would do I don't think we want to do a show with the Super Chat thing. Like, we have subscribers, and that's kind of how people show their appreciation for the show. I don't think we would actually like to do a segment where we it's just not our style. It's not the kind of thing we're doing. I'm not ruling it out totally. I'll bring it up to Sven, but it seems like I think we like the format we do. Streaming it is something we might definitely do. I mean, that's something we could talk about, but I don't know that dedicating the show or part of the show to like Super Chats is, because a lot of people, I'll be honest with you, the Super Chats segment of shows is often interesting for the Super Chatters.
Mm. it's a thing that I always keep to the end.
The
questions are interesting, so
yeah, it's good to have questions. That's true. Questions are good if they're good questions.
Yes,
and I'll trust your judgment on that.
I'll do my best. One question that I've just occurred to me: is it true? Because I heard this. I don't know if it's true. Is it true that TDS now or TRS only accept donations in cryptocurrency at this point?
No, that's not true. You can. We don't have credit cards, but you can send us a money order, or you could send us currency, U.S. currency via mail. And if you don't have an account, you can put down the account details you want, your username and email address and password that you want us to use, and send us usually a money order or if other forms of currency. No personal checks, please. For security reasons for you and us. And but you can do Bitcoin. That's the way most people are doing it. We also have this thing called e-check, which is kind of like an electronic check, and people have been using that a lot. It's a little bit of a more fraught system. I mean, it works. It works from the end user perspective, it works, but there's some people don't like it because it feels like there's a lot of data you're putting in, but I do assure people that we don't retain that data. It goes to the processor of the e-check thing. But yeah, I mean, it's what it is, but no, it's not only Bitcoin, but Bitcoin is preferred. And hey, we also take donations in Bitcoin. If you would like to, I know Bitcoin is pretty precious right now. So even a little bit is a lot of money. So you could give us a small donation of Bitcoin, and it's actually a good amount of money. I'm just throwing that out there.
You know? So you're so much better at this than me. I get so embarrassed asking for donations, but yes.
Well, look, I mean, here's the thing. We have to eat, and the thing is, like, our media ecosphere, shall we say, ecosystem, whatever it is, the media biosphere that we live in is like a very fragile thing, and people need to be supported. So you should definitely support Millennial Woes as well, and all people that are doing this that are bringing you these views, because you can't take it for granted. We got to eat too, you know. Like, you know, when you donate to TRS, like, that is my bread and butter, and the same with Sven and Alex and Stryker and other people that work for the company are, you know, it's our bread and butter. It's how we live. And we, you know, that, and we bring you content every day. And I'm not embarrassed of saying, like, yeah, it's something that is worth paying for what we're doing. And people feel that way about it. No one really gets mad about that. There are people that do, but I feel like mostly those kinds of people are really stirring shit and are troublemakers more than anything. People do, and we're not asking for a lot, $10 a month.
Yeah, I know. And you do get these people who will step in just to cause shit, like, well, why aren't you doing this for the love of it and all that kind of stuff?
What do you do for the love of it? What, I mean, my thing is, what does this guy do for the, why, will you break my balls for the love of it? Is that what you do for free? Like, what do you do for free? You break my balls. Okay, I agree. You love that enough to do it for free. I believe you on that.
I'll clip that out and that'll be my response to people in future.
Yeah.
All right. So someone says,
like, if someone would pay you to break my balls, would you take the money?
I'll proceed with the super chats here. Support the people who have their faces out there and in the public. Yes, indeed. Thank you, Zero D.
Yeah.
All right. Someone says, can TRS start accepting subscriptions through Entropy? Entropy doesn't do subscriptions, but it does super chats. That's all that it's for. So,
I will look into this and I'm not going to definitely say no, because we actually typically people buy a set period of time. We don't have recurring subscriptions anymore. It's like you buy a set length of time and you have to buy again when that runs out, because we just the method, you can't Bitcoin. I mean, for those of you that understand how Bitcoin works, how can you do a recurring payment with Bitcoin? There's really no way to do it.
Yeah, not yet anyway.
I mean, programmatically, I'm sure someone could think up a way to do wallet to wallet. As long as one wallet had Bitcoin in it, you could always send to another wallet, get a new address and send. But no one has done that yet. That has not been set up, and I don't have the time to do that kind of thing. And I mean, I can imagine it, but it hasn't been done as of yet.
It's definitely something that should be done. I'd be amazed if it's not there within a couple of years, or, you know, it's just such an obvious thing. Okay, it's true. We listen to TRS for the serious commentary, not the goofing around. Also, it tends to be really, really hard to listen to an episode of TDS and understand/follow what you guys are talking about. Could you make it more accessible to listeners?
Okay, that's a criticism I've heard, and I've taken it, and I understand it, that we have become insular, if you will, somewhat, where we feel like we're talking to people that already get it all. And I try sometimes, I used to do this thing, I haven't done this in a while, where I used to be like, all right, well, I'm going to go back, I'm going to peel this back, and I'm going to assume, I mean, I used to say, saying I used to have, any show could be somebody's first show. And I haven't said that in a year or so. And that's a failing of mine. So that's a very good point. Yes, I think we can. Yeah, and oftentimes then there's a lot of memes, a lot of in jokes, and a lot of stuff that is for longtime fans. Even like jokes between myself and Sven, where we pretend to have a disagreement over something, or we have little like we pretend to fight. Some people can't tell that it's a joke when it is, and it seems like very, to someone that's new to the show, they'd be like, okay, this is, now it's not, they'd be like, what am I looking at? They'd just be like, oh, this is something that's like a fan service show, right? And so we have to, I would agree, we have to maybe peel back from that a little bit more and do some more broadly accessible stuff. I'll agree with that.
All right. The best thing about, and this is related to what we were saying at the start, the best thing about Trump is that he doesn't give a shit. The worst thing about Trump is that he doesn't give a shit. Catch-22.
That's true. Yeah, he really just, if he doesn't give a shit on this, then yeah. I mean, he will sort of say anything. But, you know, it's not that he'll say anything. He's only said the word white like 3 times.
Jesus. That's incredible, isn't it?
No.
Okay. And then someone else says, Trump is again, this is a big $50 donation, so thanks very much. And he says, Trump is against the deep state. That's why he will pardon Snowden and Assange, right? lol.
Yeah. That's another thing that Trump will pardon members of the particular group that belong to that particular sect on the advice of something called the Aleph, A-L-E-P-H Institute, which is a so-called charity for this particular group. And people donate to that, and then they get pardons from the president.
It's like papal, what was it called? The papal favors?
Pay for play.
Yeah. That's incredible.
Oh, like indulgences, you mean?
Yeah. Yes, papal indulgences. That's
yeah.
It.
Yeah. It's yeah, except it's there is particular group indulgences.
Okay.
Rabbinical indulgences, shall we say.
Okay.
But yeah, no, like that's it's literally that bad. There's an article if you check out National-Justice, which is Stryker's Eric Stryker's news magazine that he's got online. He's got a good article on this just up today. It's ridiculous. Yeah, and no, I don't expect and far be it, not even just like Assange and Snowden who would do you know how and the other thing, it would be very popular for Trump to do that. He would cement his reputation. He could also pardon those Proud Boys that went to jail. Although supposedly I guess there might be an issue there where they are on state charges, not federal charges. So I think he can only do federal. I don't think he can pardon state level crimes, and their crimes might be at the state level. He could pardon James Fields, who was a federal crime. He could pardon the members of the Rise Above movement who went to jail. Those were federal prosecutions that they were prosecuted federally, not on the state level. So he could pardon them. Not going to happen. Not going to happen.
All right. There's another one. Oh, yeah. Live interactive episodes of TDS would be amazing. Also, I'd pay to hear a certain someone on TRS again discussing his decision to vote for Biden. Yeah, okay. It's amazing.
Not worth it.
It's amazing how many people are asking about that matter.
Well, I mean, I can comment on the matter generally. Like, switching sides is not particularly large-brained, in my opinion. And, like, what – like, we have to be able to analyze this system. Like, just because it pisses off a lot of people that you grew to hate to go anti – you know, just being anti-Trump is enough. Like, taking the extra step of, like, almost seeming pro-Biden to the point where people – feel that you are, even if they're wrong. I don't know if that's been denied or not, but like I don't agree with that stance. I think you have to leave yourself the ability to attack this administration. I mean, critically, verbally attack, obviously. You know what I'm saying? Yes, I'm not talking about them. You have to leave yourself the because you're going to want to do it because they're not going to be good. Like, I mean, what do you think they're going to be like good? How? No, they're going to be just as bad. And look, it's not like all this stuff that the Republicans do by dog whistling to whites and promising certain things on immigration and stuff like that. The Democrats do it too. The Democrats promise certain popular reforms. They promise worker protections. They promise higher wages. They promise health care. You don't get that. The only thing you get is woke. The only thing you get is wokeness. And on the other side, the only thing you get is like pro big business stuff. So in the end, big business wins. Woke capital actually is the only winner in this system. And everybody hates woke capital left and right. And they are the only ones that win.
Yes.
So you can't like be like, it's literally freaking light switch brain to go and announcing that you're voting for him. It's like, dude, no, I just didn't vote this election. I just didn't. It's like, no, I just didn't vote.
Yeah, it's a terrible choice. Okay, and this is relating to what you were saying earlier about TDS being a bit too jargon-esque at this point. Someone says it's impossible to
saying
share.
I accept the criticism.
Yeah. Someone says it's impossible to share an episode with a normie. The first 15 minutes they listen to is stuff that has nothing to do with normal life. You guys need to make shareable content. There we go. Okay. And then someone says 90% of Republicans think the election was completely rigged. What kind of backlash will the establishment face in the years to come?
Well, that's the thing. It's like that's something that they are very worried about. Like you see them saying there's a lot of articles in the mainstream now that talk about them being worried about how many people don't believe the election was real and how this is going to have reverberations and this has hurt democracy and such. And in that way, I mean, that might be a good thing. But the other thing is that if those people who are convinced of that are convinced of it in like the wrong way. It's sort of like this calculation was made where, like, okay, there's a lot of people that don't trust the system as it is. So let's make sure that the way in which they don't trust it is like really stupid. And like, let's send them down paths. So I think that while there will be, and part of the way that they keep people in that sort of really dumb, like QAnon or conservative pro-Trump camp, part of the way that they keep them there is by the mainstream media being so odious. Like the mainstream media being so bad, so condescending, so smarmy, so like that is a play as well. That also, because they're teaching libtards how to be that way and how to involve themselves in that dichotomy at the level that they want them involved, and they're also, by being so repugnant, they're making sure that those people will never come back. So I think that some of this is actually more, I don't want to say all planned, but it's more so than you might think, where they're actually kind of happy for people to be there as long as they're like, they like people doing QAnon. There's people that raise alarm bells about it, but they'd rather you did that than other stuff because they are controlling that as well. So the thing that they don't want people to do, one thing we know for sure, is what they don't want people doing is coming to our politics and having like a reasonable and thought out critique of like both sides of this political spectrum and definite goals and a definite ideology and a definite constituency that we're aiming for. That's one thing they don't want you to do for sure. And I don't know if the lack of trust in the electoral system will lead more people to us or not. It's entirely possible that it won't. And that it's in fact intended to keep people stuck, because there are people on this election fraud stuff that are so single-minded about it that it's difficult to talk to them and be like, look, just leave it. It's over. Like, that's now, what do we do? The question for those people, it's sort of like, okay, if what you're saying is true, the Republican Party cannot possibly be an outlet for your political ambitions, because they will just do this again. So what's your next step? And a lot of the people don't want to say that. They don't want to take that step because what they really are doing is sort of actually kind of just campaigning for the next Republican election.
Yeah, it's keeping them in they're staying in the familiar ground, even though they're moaning about it. Yeah, because it's comfortable. All right. Neocon Destroyer, you've asked me another question about something that I think Mike doesn't want to talk about, and he's made it clear that he doesn't want to talk about it, so I'm not going to go into that. It's just, you know, personal stuff behind the scenes that is for that domain. Okay, Happy New Year, Woz and Mike. Question for Mike: is the particular group you speak of the Calvinist Puritans?
No.
All right, I've been misunderstanding the whole conversation.
Oh, wow, so we've been off the whole time. We've been across purpose. I thought you understood that. Yeah, no. Yes, it's these Calvinists.
Yeah, these damn European style Calvinists. All right.
Well, in fact, the guy that popularized that meme is a member of said group.
Really?
Oh yeah, Moldbug.
Oh, of course. Yes.
I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but from my understanding, he's the guy that really kind of pushed that. Like, we always used to make fun of him, like, oh, that must have been the Calvinists.
Yeah, fucking hell. Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? The ICOMs, it's the Calvinists.
There is a criticism of Puritanism. I think there are valid criticisms of certain puritanical aspects, and a lot of the puritanical stuff you see in America does come out of frankly the New England area, which was populated by English people. And I will say there is a puritanical streak, and that is something that has been harmful. It is worthy of criticism, and there's a lot of tendencies that different kinds of white people have that are worthy of criticism and actually hold us back somewhat, but it's different than the kind of criticism we have for the particular group, if you know what I mean. Like, it's like, look, I think that English people do have a bit of a puritanical streak, as Northern Europeans generally have a sort of this thing to them where they do this.
They definitely do. They definitely.
And you can understand it. I'm a Northern European too. I'm mostly Scandinavian. I'm only actually 25% Serbian, even though my last name is Serbian. Mostly I'm Norwegian, and Norwegians have it as well. And you can understand it as a mechanism when you understand how these people grew and evolved in the places that they did. But it's something that can hold you back when you go up against said tribe, because they, that's not an issue with them. And if they can get you to split along your own rules when they're never going to split on that kind of rule, they have an advantage, period.
Yeah. Okay, somebody asks, will Eric Stryker ever walk again?
I don't know. I don't know.
And someone else just said, yeah, so someone else said that he got a new souped-up wheelchair for Kwanzaa.
Yes, we are raising funds right now for a Kwanzaa present for Stryker, a new wheelchair for Kwanzaa, yes.
All right. Mike, when I asked you about MW's departure from the movement, you got mad at me, but I think now we can all acknowledge that MW is an incredible talent and important to our movement. Well, thank you very much, Dylan. That's very nice of you to say.
Yes. So. And when I got mad at you, it was because you were doing the thing that I don't want to do on this show, too, which is talk about personal stuff.
All right, yeah, yeah. It's been addressed at this point, so yeah. I've certainly said my piece. So yeah, we don't need to go into that now. But thank you, Dylan. That's very kind of you to say so. All right, and now I've got to go through the DLive diamonds. So okay, Angerad Celtic, these people have all donated a diamond, so here we go. Angerad Celtic, religion must be based on race, period. The end. That's Angerad. She's very... hot-headed Angerad. She's always on my stuff. So thank you for that, Angerad. Millennial Rocks, thanks, MW, for all the great work you do for our community. Thank you very much. That's film and ancestry. A certain country gets millions of dollars. We get $600.
If that. I mean, you know, some people might not even, you know.
Yeah. Angerad says you can't vax against a coronavirus. Vaccinate. Well, this is probably why it's the RNA, and you know, I mean, fuck knows. This is all.
I'm just not qualified to discuss that. Like, yeah,
neither am I.
Talking about messenger NRA, though. You know who the messenger NRA is?
No,
it's a black guy in an NRA hat.
Oh, right. Okay.
And anybody they choose as like their public face is going to be black at this point. It's just a guarantee.
Okay.
What do you call a black guy at an NRA meeting?
I don't know.
Keynote speaker.
All right. Let me get through these diamonds. Otherwise, I'll get waylaid. Mike, get a DLive channel. Thank you guys for all you do. Happy New Year. Mike, looking forward to your Twitter return. Come to DLive, Mike. Fellow Calvinists, hail NJP. Do you think a civil war is possible?
Possible, yeah. I don't think it's... I think that we're going to see... We've already seen like low-level violence between different groups represent... And the thing, the worst part about it is the groups that are sort of like the ones that I would sympathize with don't even understand which side they're really on. You know what I mean? Where the opposing groups, the anarchists and the anti-whites and stuff, they understand exactly. Like, they tell you, we're attacking you because you're white. And they're like, they're attacking us because we're conservative. And it's like, no.
Yeah, yeah.
No, they're listen to them when they tell you why they're punching you in the face. They're telling you the truth. It's because you're white.
All right. And then... Finally, can you ask Mike to say, hey, I'm walking here.
Hey, I'm walking here.
All right. What's that from?
It's like a thing that New Yorkers are supposed to say.
Yeah, yeah, like, I know that. I thought it was from a specific film. Like, I can imagine.
It might be, but now it's just like a cliche thing. It's like, hey, don't.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Hey, I'm walking here.
I've seen it in a film. It's going to annoy me all night now.
It's been in movies, but I don't know if that's where it originated.
One of those classic, typically New York things. Okay. And then someone else says about the 25-point plan. I think that's probably too much at this stage.
So, yeah, well, check out the 25-point program of the NJP. It's a lot of stuff in there. Man, we could have done some stuff on that, but maybe next time. or another time. But yeah, there's a lot of stuff there, so it is would be a lot to do at this point. But yeah,
all right. And then someone else says, "Why you gotta bust on my balls?"
Is this somebody that has like a? It's not from New York, I'm assuming. Like,
well, I'm not from New York, so whatever. I mean, if I say it, it might make it sound.
So is this guy? Is this guy just like? Are you just stereotyping me? This guy just. I can talk like a New Yorker. I can do the New York accent if I want. Like, I can fall into it. In fact, they used to embarrass my parents, who were very CNN standard, as they would say. We're very proper English speakers. Like, they didn't like that I would fall into this East Coast brutal. It's a brutal New York, New Jersey accent, but I will talk like that depending, but it's, you know, I don't know. What we bring my balls for?
All right.
Fucking guy.
Let's leave it at that because I'm starting to
feel. I don't know how much I'm allowed to drop F-bombs, though, and like, I, you know, that's a key integral part of this accent is just, you know.
You can drop F-bombs, that's fine.
Oh, you can?
Oh, yeah. There aren't any you know, special interest groups who are opposed to dropping F-bombs.
Right, yeah.
Okay, excellent. Well, let's leave it at that. We've been going for almost, 1 hour 45. So this has been quite a long one. So thank you very much, Mike, for giving us your time. People were very excited about you appearing.
That's great. I'm really happy to do it. This is a lot of fun. And I'm glad people were excited about it. You know, I'm really glad you're doing it again. Last time we did this was 2 years ago, 2018.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you've done. Did you do it last year?
I did it last year. Last year it was still purely on YouTube. I hadn't started on DLive at that point, so there wasn't a safe alternative. But now there is. So.
Well, YouTube's been completely destroyed. I mean, you're one of the last survivors. It's. You know, and they're not done yet. I'm going to have an article on nationaljusticeparty.com probably tomorrow, maybe the day after, about a new thing that Jonathan Greenblatt from our particular group, the Anti-Defamation League, we can talk about them. The Anti-Defamation League, Jonathan Greenblatt, has put out a new paper calling for yet more censorship. He's not happy. He's not happy yet. And the stuff he's saying is it's like he wants even more. He wants, and he does the thing where he's like, now we understand that people have a right to free speech, but still we're actually going to call for the government to oversee the, basically he's going to say he wants the private companies to like write their terms of service in such a way that then the government can oversee it. And I'm like, that's an interesting workaround.
But
something that is not something unexpected of your particular group, Jonathan Greenblatt. But yeah, so I've got it's a new article that came out on the 22nd of December that he put out where he's just absolutely calling for total censorship. It's amazing. And look, he's the one that did it. They are the one that did it to YouTube and they brag about it. Certainly other groups were involved, but they were the prime mover behind it. So if you're mad about YouTube censorship, and one of the things I'll say about people on YouTube or have been censored from YouTube or maybe they got kicked off YouTube or whatever they might say about my focus and my focus on criticisms of said group and such, every one of them knows what's off limits and what's not off limits. And based on that alone, you know that in the very least in that realm, this group has all of the power. So that's all. I'll leave it at that. You can actually criticize almost any group on YouTube. You can even you can criticize black people to a certain extent on YouTube. You can't criticize the other group.
All right. Okay. Well, let's leave it at that. And people are asking me to open the chest, but I don't. How do I do that? Do I just click on the chest? This is the DLive thing. Tell me how to do this.
DLive's always been. I'm a bit too much of a. I guess I'm like too much of a Gen Xer. DLive is just confusing to me. Like the interface. What's going on?
I get that with Discord. I just can't.
I hate Discord, and no one should use Discord either. Discord is compromised.
Oh yeah, absolutely. But also the interface just overwhelms me. I can't handle it. DLive, I'm trying to get in on it because you know it's obviously useful, and I don't.
Yeah. It does seem like people are able to have a certain amount of free speech there. So, yeah.
Exactly. And I feel like I'm a bit too young to to be, you know, just say, oh, leave it to the Zoomers. You know, that would obviously be a bit ridiculous.
Well, I'm just too, like, not retarded to do that. Like, you know, I mean, like, I've always done my... See, here's the thing. I've worked in interface development on websites and apps and stuff myself. So I just think it's too busy and exciting and too much going on. Like, but that's actually my viewpoint from actually a technical as well. Like, it's not... I mean, I can figure it out. I'm not dumb. But, like, I just don't like it. And I didn't like Discord either. Just don't like it. I'm actually was kind of saved by not liking Discord because I never used it. And then it turned out, wow, the whole freaking platform is compromised. And it's just because I just didn't like it that I never used it.
I had a bad feeling about it. And it turned out to be.
Yeah.
Instinct was correct. It's just, it even felt like a fucking trap. Okay. So I'm going to distribute the rewards now. I think I've worked out how to do it. It's fairly straightforward. So, okay, I'm going to do it now and then. All right, here we go. Oh, it's going to do it in 27 seconds. So, okay, in the meantime, I'll tell you what's happening tomorrow night. First of all, it's Horace, then Lone Wolf, who's a new blogger, then JF Garipi, and then Settlers Lament, who's one of the NRX academic agent crowd. So that should be interesting. Now let's see. Okay, another 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. There you go.
So what is this, like you give a treasure chest to fans or something?
I think it is. Like it's a cryptocurrency that's native to DLive, and everyone donates things throughout like super chats, and then you can donate them back. I think that's what's going on here. So sorry to be such an old fart.
And I'm assuming you can then exchange said cryptocurrency for Bitcoin, or which you can exchange for cash. And
exactly. Yeah. You need to use Poloniex for that.
The exchange. Yeah.
So it's a currency called BTT. So I think that's how it all works.
Hey, if it's exchangeable in some way or another for real money, you know, that's something we can talk about another time, is what is money and what isn't it. But
yeah, that's another matter. But yeah. It's all quite interesting. So the luckiest people were White Kang 84, Tabby Lovecraft, Critiqued, Yoramaro, and Luso Loser. So congratulations to those five people. Everyone. So there you go. All right. Thanks very much, everyone. And hope you've enjoyed this. Thank you, Mike, for doing this.
Thanks a lot.
All right. I'll see you all in tomorrow night. Mike, thank you for taking part in Millennial 2020.
Of course.
All right. I'll see you all tomorrow night. Bye-bye for now.